In terms of the role of the ACFP, in the absence of the chair, we need to elect an acting chair for this meeting. Can I call for nomination? Mashmati?
Can we perhaps first do this as a committee alone? Yes, I request that the ACFP have a 1 minute chance.
Then can I call for nominations for an acting chairperson? Mr. Mashamati?
Yeah, thank you, Committee Secretary. I raise my hand to nominate Honorable Dugan to chair the meeting.
Could I have a seconder? Okay, Mr. Mahati. Okay, motion to second it. Mr. Sikani, if you can please act on behalf of the chairperson for this meeting.
Thank you. Thank you really. I think I must accept the nomination. Honourable members, I think we are late because we're supposed to attend at about 12 because there are so many things. Others want to prepare some the papers whatsoever, but at least 12:30 we must attend the meeting. Thank you. Good morning, everybody, in the meeting. Good morning, honorable members and the delegation from UNICEF. I must welcome you in this meeting of ours. Sorry for delay. We're not here just because of some. There are so many meetings. So everybody is busy. So sorry for that. But we will ask you at least at about 12:30, we must be finished with this meeting. Because there are some other meetings that we were supposed to attend. Thank you for that. I must first, I don't want to delay. There are some apologies. Honorable Makala who is abroad, Honorable Temba, Honorable Mukoro is going to join us late. Let me introduce myself first. I am Nolthando Tsakane from the Eastern Cape. I'm the chairperson of the Lady Environmental Affairs and standing for the chairperson, Honorable Mabeye, who is also head other engagements. I'm declared by the ANC in the House of National Council of Provinces. I will take it from to my honorable member on my left.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm Khalif Mashamadi, a member of this committee in the NCOP. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Danalias. I'm also a member of this committee, and I'm representing the Western Province. Morning. My name is Daryl Worth. I'm from the Free State Province, and I'm also a member on this committee. Thank you.
I'm from the Northern Cape, the biggest province in South Africa, and I'm standing in for Honorable Mukoro.
And I think the staff, support staff must introduce themselves.
Good morning, my name is Maria Salomon from the Committee Secretary Committee.
Yes.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Matilda Nassau. I'm the Executive Secretary to the Chief Secretary.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Stephanie Matthews. I'm the researcher for this committee, and my focus areas are children and persons with disabilities.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Gary Roder. I'm the researcher, and I focus on gender.
My name is Nontando.
My name is Nontando Kissing, and I'm from the Ministry for Women, Children and Persons with Disabilities.
Good morning, my name is Kolelwa Mabindisa. I'm from committee.
Okay, there's
another lady.
Let me see again.
Mm-hmm. My name is Honorable Member. I'm Vaisa Papu, Secretary to Honorable Mohar.
There's a gentleman there.
Mabusito Bala from PNG.
Thank you very much. Please, I must hand over to UNICEF.
My name is Aida Gurma. I'm the country representative of the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, and I'm very, very happy to be here, and I'd like to thank the Select Committee for inviting UNICEF to present our report.
Good morning. I'm André Levier. I'm also from UNICEF, responsible for social policy.
My name is George Lai Ajay. I'm the chief of the social policy section in
Yeah, I just wanted to say that André Vivier has just been appointed. Actually, he used to be with the education. He was our education specialist, and now he has just moved to social policy, and he will be actually responsible for our engagement with Parliament and NCOP and so on. So, I think this is for us a great pleasure to introduce him as the person who will be working closely.
Okay, thank you very much. Without wasting time, I think I must hand over to UNICEF to present the literature.
Okay, thank you so much. I think the request that we received.
Sorry, everybody has got a judgment? Okay,
I think we have distributed the 2008 and 2009 report. I think the request that we received from the committee was to present the 2008 report, but I just want to say that our calendar year is slightly different than because we start from January to December. So, but we have, that's why we shared with you also our 2009 report, so I hope that you will be able I won't spend so much time going through the situation because you are aware of the situation of children in South Africa. I think from what we can say here is that tremendous progress has been made in the past 16 years. And, whether it is in terms of setting the, making sure that the legal and policy frameworks are in place, accelerating programs for children. I think few countries can say that they have actually reaching 9 million children with the example of child support grants. In child survival as well, although there are still some issues, there are some very programs that have actually reached universal coverage and so on that South Africa should be proud of. However, we know that there are still challenges. Challenges in terms of poverty, disparity, HIV and AIDS, and so on, that still have devastating impacts on the lives of children and women. UNICEF has opened its office in South Africa in 1995, if I'm not mistaken, and 93 is an institutional memory here. And we signed our basic cooperation of agreement with South Africa at that time in 93. So we do, and it's that basic cooperation agreement which serves as sort of a basis for working with the government of South Africa and its partners, including non-governmental organizations. We have a presence in 190 countries. We are the world's leading advocate for children. We are mandated by the United Nations to advocate for the realization of children's rights, as stated in the Convention on the, Rights of Children. We're very proud that South Africa signed the and ratified the convention in 1995. And the way we operate is that our program of cooperation is defined within the framework of the United Nations Development Framework, because we do not work in isolation. We work with other UN agencies. So one of the first thing that we did, we do normally in when we start our program cycle, which could go between 3 to 5 years, is actually, as United Nations come together, define the framework for collaboration with the government of South Africa, look where we have we can actually add value and so on. So the United Nations Development Assistance Framework for this program cycle was defined is from 2007-2010. It was recently extended by another year to align with the government's new priorities and so on. So UNICEF also, the current country program that we have is actually from 2007 to 2011. So this year we will be discussing with a different arms of government on the new country program, on what, where do we really add value now at UNICEF. So I think we will be engaging with Parliament, with provinces and others to really begin to define really for the next program for 2012 and beyond what will be our priorities. In terms of, this one, I think, as with all the other United Nations, as a United Nations body, basically we are guided by the principles of impartiality and neutrality. We are supposed to be the independent voice of children. We rely entirely, we are one of the few UN agencies that rely entirely on voluntary funds, which means that we have to aggressively mobilize resources, and we do have various mechanisms. We have UNICEF national committees in a number of industrialized countries, and they're usually out there advocating for children's rights, mobilizing resources, which they can, which they then channel to country offices. We have a 36-member executive board, and South Africa is a member of our executive board, and that's our board that establishes policies and also approves our country program. And next year when we submit our new country program, the UNICEF executive board will probably request some comments from the South Africa, the High Commission for South Africa at the United Nations in New York, and they will also request comments from the country. So that South Africa has a very important place at the UNICEF Executive Board. How are we organized? Our office is based in Pretoria, so we have a staff of about 60 at the moment. And we work out of Pretoria, but we're not limited to Pretoria. We cover all the provinces and so on based on the priorities identified in our country program. So we have quite a mobile team there. So I think I mentioned the basic cooperation agreement, which is the basis for collaboration with the government. We cover, in terms of program structure, we have 5 programs. We have health and nutrition program, education and adolescent development, protection of children against all forms of abuse, neglect, and exploitation, social transformation and strategic leveraging, and my colleagues here are from that particular section, because it's sort of cross-cutting. It looks at social policy analysis, strategic partnership, and so on. And then there's a cross-cutting program also there in terms of external relations, program communication, planning, monitoring, and evaluation, which is, in terms of budget, I think we have grown significantly. I mean, we are a relatively we are considered to be a middle-sized country program because it's a middle-income country. We do not have such a large budget, but we have still grown in the past 2-3 years. Our budget, when it was approved for this country program, was about 8 million a year. Now we are close to 20 million this year. So we have seen almost, I think, you know, we hope that by the end of the year we'll have almost tripled. So it is actually close to 20 million US dollars. Sorry, I think it's not a range. Reminding me. Some of the key achievements, 2008-2009, I lumped those three-year reports. I think because it's the middle income, before I go into the details, in all our strategy here as a middle, you know, because we're supporting a country, the middle income country, with a significant amount of resources and things, our approach is slightly different than in countries in low income countries. So here we focus a lot on upstream support in terms of policy development, research to model innovative programming approaches. We do advocacy in areas where we have to influence policies and so on. So that has been pretty much, that's why when you see some of the activities, a lot of them in terms of support to policy development, support to a review of the legislative framework and so on. In child survival, I think again here, just a reminder that South Africa is one of the countries that is really having a problem achieving the health and health-related Millennium Development Goals, largely because of HIV/AIDS. We have seen almost a reversal in the gains in child survival. We are actually very pleased to see the very strong leadership now being provided in HIV and AIDS and so on, which hopefully would begin to reverse this negative trend. But some of the work, a lot of the focus, of course, is on HIV. AIDS accounts for almost 50% of deaths in under five. And so a lot of our work has been really on trying to accelerate and prevent pediatric AIDS. Between 2000 and 2009, some of the key achievements include the support to review and implement the national prevention of mother-to-child transmission of HIV policy guidelines, to include routine offering of HIV testing, and also the rollout of a more effective regimen for pregnant women and their infants. Supporting also, we have also worked very closely with the National Department of Health in developing the infant feeding and PMTCT communication campaigns. And here again, infant feeding has to be, also the guidelines had to be revised and aligned because of the HIV and AIDS and so on. UNICEF also supported the documentation of best practices in PMTCT, also experiences in young. We look at also some of the best practices. In terms of the, one of the key things that we support, one of the key interventions supported by UNICEF last year, towards the end of last year together, was actually the review of the national response to HIV and AIDS. This was at the request of the Minister of Health, and it was a joint effort with other UN agencies, WHO, UNAIDS, UNFPA, UNICEF, came together, our headquarters, regional colleagues came and actually reviewed the national response and made a series of recommendations, and we are pleased to see that many of those recommendations are being implemented. Another milestone, I think, in those 2 years is actually the introduction of the Child Health Week. South Africa, again here, is one of the countries that has the lowest coverage in vitamin A supplementation. And vitamin A, we know, is so crucial to it's very important for child survival. And this now is being in the routine immunization, the routine program is not covered only up to age one, one and a half. After that, we sort of start to lose those children. So one, in order to address that now, the country is supporting Child Health Week. So far it's once a year, but we hope that it, this is going to be twice a year because it's important that a child gets at least a vitamin A twice a year. The first in 2008, it was only vitamin A, and about 3 million children were reached. In 2009, that campaign was actually integrated other high-impact interventions like deworming, growth monitoring. So that way, we maximize on actually the campaign to increase the coverage of high-impact interventions. The other work that we've been doing is actually to support, one is to work, we've been working with the government, with the national department on the formulation of a maternal, newborn and child health strategic plan. Within that, UNICEF was actually asked to model, to develop an effective model of integrated maternal, newborn and child and child health in Mpumalanga, but we're also doing it in KZN and in Lembe, and we hope that this year we'll be able to evaluate the impact of those models on children and women's health, and if we are able actually now to generate the evidence, if we're able to show that this is the way we're, we hope that that will inform the design of the national maternal, newborn, and child health program. So there's quite a bit of modeling out there, but I think it's important also that we take time to really see what lessons have been learned, use them now then to influence the scale up of the program nationwide. In education, one of the UNICEF has been actually strongly advocating in South Africa as well as other countries, including middle-income countries like Thailand, introduction of the child-friendly school framework here in South Africa. It's being recoined as the safe and caring child-friendly school framework. Basically, it's really looking at the human rights-based approach, looking at issues of quality, equity, involvement of parents, and so on. So it's a series of principle measures that are that we are promoting to address the issue of quality, to address the issue of safety of children in and around schools, and the whole issue of governance of schools by involving parents and so on in the management. Partnership with the Department of Education, UNICEF has been modeling now this child-friendly school approach in about 800 of the 5,000 or so schools identified by the department as priorities for support. In those 800 schools, we have been able to train teachers, help develop plans for those child-friendly school, individual development plans for the rollout of the child-friendly schools. Sports for development is one of the elements of the child-friendly schools and child-friendly schools. And this has now, of course, we are also capitalizing on the momentum around the World Cup to really push and accelerate this element. So there is actually a policy now that is being finalized by the Department of Education on the institutionalization of sports for development. The idea is to use sports for development as a springboard to address other issues such as HIV prevention, violence in schools, and others by equipping young people with life skills training. Over 2,000 girls' education movement and boys' education movement clubs have been established nationally. Of them, 60% girls' education others, 23, are currently active. And this is a program that actually is sort of a peer education program. It really provides young people with leadership skills. Some of these children have actually even traveled internationally and so on, and they try to actually engage very actively with the school governing boards and others and be more active actually. So they are not only active in their schools but also in their communities, and I think it is our hope that this initiative will be consolidated and taken to scale. The Department of Education also was supported by UNICEF and USAID in the evaluation of school funding norms to review the no fee and fee exemption policies. The report was finalized and disseminated recently, and we are now engaged in discussing with the department on the next step and how actually the findings can be used now for the education sector reform, which has just been initiated. A finalized study on teacher attendance focuses on teacher time spent on teaching and facilitating learning, and provides insight and better understanding of the challenges faced by male and female teachers. The preliminary findings indicate that there is 11% absenteeism rate among teachers nationally. Again, we support some of this research with the hope that the findings will be used to improve the education, the national education program. So it's important, of course, that we make sure that the findings are used for deliberation, for policy dialogue, and so forth. A key achievement here was also the development of a national early learning development standard that have regulated learning stages for children aged 0 to 4. The South Africa standards now are being used as a prototype in Eastern and Southern Africa. So this is again a contribution to the scale up of early childhood and care development program, which is considered a priority in the Children's Act, actually. We've also supported the documentation of good practices of alternative ECD approaches. And these are community, home and community-based early childhood development programs. A lot of focus in the past has been on formal center-based approaches, but we are also able, but there are also some very good models, some community-based models that, if supported, could actually provide children with a holistic, care and development. The other focus has been, actually, another support there has been, we've been working with the University of Limpopo to try to integrate some of the child-friendly school concepts in the teacher training, in the pre and incident teacher training. This is again with the hope that what we have done in those 800 or so schools, the lessons, we try to make sure that they are mainstreamed in the policies and in the various tools, like the education management information system has tried again to incorporate some of those indicators for child-friendly schools. We've also supported, particularly in KZN and Eastern Cape, refurbishment of classrooms here in collaboration with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, because we do, I think you're probably aware that Nelson Mandela Foundation has been working actually with UNICEF and UNICEF national committees worldwide to mobilize resources for schools in Africa, in more than 6 countries in Africa, and South Africa gets some of that fund as well, although we are not the priority country for this global initiative. We still get some of the funds, and the target is being Eastern Cape and KZN. In response also to the emergency at the border with Zimbabwe, particularly in relation to unaccompanied minors from Zimbabwe. We've been supporting, working with the Limpopo government to ensure access of these children to schools, and some of it is actually we have provided some mobile classrooms and others just to make sure that the schools have the capacity to to take this kid. And the child protection, we have provided support to the National Action Committee on Children and AIDS. The committee aims to strengthen national capacity to provide community and government support to a greater number of orphans and children made vulnerable by HIV/AIDS. Here also we've been working with the Department of Social Development and the NGO partners on the collection of baseline information on the number, reach, and services provided to orphans and vulnerable children through the Child Care Forum. Here we've also been looking at the issue of the rollout of succession planning training in 27 districts. One of the achievements last year was also the production of a sort of user-friendly, I think initially it was child-friendly, but it looks like grown-ups are also very much interested in those publications, I would call it a user-friendly version of the Children's Act. And these are booklets that are available for rights holders as well as duty bearers. And they do take in a very simple language explain what Children's Act is all about. And our hope is that it is used not just by by adults, but that children also know what their rights are, so we can actually do more to involve children in the decisions that affect them. There's also ongoing discussion on the issue of identification with the Department of Home Affairs, because I think one of the issues that we have noticed that came out through one of the publications last year was actually in terms of child support grants, those that were really left out of the eligible children were in the 0 to 2 because of the delay in obtaining birth registration. So this issue now, I think, it has now been waived as a result, so we're quite happy with that, but still there is that whole issue of really accelerating the that process so that families and children and families who actually are eligible to social grants are able to access them on time. I think here again that we've been quite involved with the with unaccompanied minors, mostly from Zimbabwe. I think we all have heard also about the children at the Methodist Church, and they were also quite a bit of in Messina. So we work with NGOs in providing support to these children, but we've also worked very closely with the Department of Social Development and also the Limpopo Department of Social Development to try to develop guidelines for addressing the needs of these children, the needs and rights of these children. The third one here is the National Audit of Multidisciplinary Service for Sexual Violence. This is in collaboration with the National Prosecuting Authority. We have been working with the National, with the NPA for a number of years now, looking at the victim support, how the rollout of the victim support centers known as the Tutuzela Care Centers. And as part of this process, we did support the national audit of the various services that exist for sexual for victims of sexual violence, and this is now being used to help with the finalization of the scale-up plan for the Tutuzela Care Centers. At the moment, there will be, I think, there are about 80 centers that are, UNICEF is only covering about 12 of those centers, but there are also the US government and others also are model. We've been working actually with the development of guidelines. We have to help develop national guidelines for probation officers and the training also in a number of provinces. There was UNICEF supported research which has now been completed to identify existing cluster foster care models and to provide empirical data to assist in obtaining funds for the rollout of this cluster foster care model. So there are some good models that have been developed and we are in discussion in terms of how this can be rolled out. Social transformation and leveraging. We've been working with the various portfolio committees, health, social development, education, and justice, to support key processes of legislation, policy oversight, and budget debate. We've also supported the design and execution of a public expenditure study on early childhood and development in South Africa. This is the first of its kind in the country and the first on early childhood development, care and development in the world. The report has just been, I think, finalized, or at least it's almost, and we hope that it will be launched shortly. But it's again designed to assist the government with the improvement in improving efficiency and effectiveness of ECD programs. So we're tracking, we've been able to track resources all the way from Treasury down to the users and really identify some of the bottlenecks now that the government can actually look. And last but not least is actually the evaluation of the Child Support Grant, which is ongoing. The Department of Social Development, the impact evaluation, is leading that process. UNICEF is part of the steering committee. Is on the steering committee for that evaluation. We're also supporting specifically the qualitative part of that evaluation. So the quantitative is funded by DSC. We are funding the smaller part, but we are also involved in providing technical support to the whole evaluation. I think this would be definitely very key in looking at, again, the efficiency, effectiveness of the the child support grant. Another study that is ongoing is actually looking at the impact of the economic recession on children. This is being supported in partnership with the Fiscal and Financial Commission of South Africa and also the University of Stellenbosch. And we have some of the preliminary findings. My colleague here on my right is the one who's leading that within the UNICEF, UNICEF and Department of Social Development have also been working on, have been looking at the contributory employment-based social insurance by orphans. The study was launched by the Minister of Social Development last year. Again, here the issue is that many children and families are not able to easily access some of the employment-based social insurance. And so we've been able to show where the bottlenecks are because it takes months and months for families to access that, those funds. And the other one is the strengthening and monitoring and evaluation framework of the Department of Social Development. Challenges, I think here we know the high level of poverty, etc., and so on, widening inequality, deficits, provision of basic services, and our resources are limited as well. And I think one of the things that we partnership, maybe I'll come back to that. So again here, UNICEF does not work in isolation, and as a matter of fact, partnership is really very key to our work. And that's why earlier on I said, Andre, it would be actually now responsible for, forging strategic partnerships. pilot basis now to engage individuals and so on. So this is a whole area that has it's fairly new for UNICEF South Africa, because we started the private sector collaboration with now in 2007. But very promising. So we are engaged with some of the corporate and other partners, UN agencies. We are all fall under the UN Secretary General, and the UN reform is very key to our work. So as we go, we are also looking at how best to strengthen collaboration with other UN agencies and the bilateral and multilateral donors who are, here, and how do we not necessarily how they give us money, but also how we can actually leverage some of the support, the resources that they are putting in the very sector. If I take an example, EU, for instance, will be putting about 100 million euro in health next year through direct budget support. And at UNICEF, we have to try and see how can we actually leverage that. So we are in discussion with EU to say, can we bring in the technical support to make that money work? And so on. So that's the kind of partnership that we look at. We work also with celebrity advocates, both South African and international advocates. I mean, you have seen, I think, in many of our publications where there were celebrities there, Simone Shaka Shaka and others. We do have quite a good collaboration with celebrities. And, of course, academic and research institutions. It's a lot of our work has been on actually research and really building the evidence that we need to scale up programs for children. Our work with academic institutions, particularly local academic institutions, has been very critical to our work. And the other one is, of course, the non-governmental organizations. Here again, we are looking at how to strengthen also that partnership. Monitoring and evaluation is key. Again, I think one of sometimes a bit of the frustration is that while a lot of studies exist in South Africa, we feel that there are some of the crucial ones, like the ones required for the measurements of Millennium Development Goals, are not always available. The last, I think, most reliable data that we have, for instance, from child mortality, measured child mortality rate, is from 1998. So working and advocating for a household survey, for demographic household survey to be conducted so South Africa knows exactly where it is at in relation to the commitments it made in the Millennium Declaration, the UN Millennium Development Goals. So our monitoring and evaluation program works then very closely with the Department of Health and Statistics SA to do that. Yeah, and our here, maybe one thing I could say that now, as we move to the new country program, what we realize is that we have a unique opportunity to scale up a response for children, particularly because the environment is favorable right now. I don't think that this kind of, we have so many opportunities. One is HIV and AIDS, which has had a devastating impact on children. Finally, now that we see a very strong leadership from the government, we see the direction. All the direction and everything seems to be going in the right way. So I think it is important now that UNICEF, we're looking at how do we support, how do we make sure that we reposition ourselves to support the new priorities. The other one is the Department of Health decision to revive primary health care. Because we believe that many of the killers of children are really easily preventable and treatable at primary health care levels. They require low-cost, high-impact interventions. These are the immunization program, vitamin A supplementation, growth monitoring, promotion of exclusive breastfeeding, and so forth. This intervention, if provided at scale, universally, each and every child can actually significantly bring down the mortality rate in South Africa. And we are confident that if this is implemented, that this new vision that the government is implementing at scale, we can actually easily see some of those goals in South Africa. It is not basically beyond South Africa's reach to achieve the latest development goals. It is possible because the resources are there, the political will is there. Now, of course, is how do we as UNICEF and the United Nations work together to support these efforts? And here, a lot of it has to go now in terms of implementation. The policies are there. How can we now work with the provinces to make sure that there are good implementation plans and good accountability structure and systems in place? And so I think over the next few years, we will have to work very clearly in terms of one is mapping the disparity, because again, we realize South Africa is not homogeneous. Some of the problems and so on tend to be concentrated in certain provinces, in certain districts, etc. So mapping really to see where is the problem is absolutely crucial, and then based on that, working with the provinces to analyze the bottlenecks so that we work together in removing those bottlenecks. But we believe all in all that we're very excited with some of those opportunities that are coming up. The Children's Act, the Child Justice Bill, all again that have now commenced, all provide an opportunity to accelerate the realization of children's rights. And I think we look forward really to working hand in hand with you in making that happen. So I'll stop here. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your fruitful presentation. I think the members have listened carefully and note down the question that they want to ask. So I will hand over to the members, the honorable members, to ask some questions. Honorable Marshamaite, honorable Tibia. Honorable TBA. Okay. Is there any? Oh, nothing. Okay. Only two members that will work. Okay. I'll start from the Honorable Marshamaite.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, and let's thank the Minister to make this presentation to the community. But just a few questions. My first question, Honorable Chair, is related to the election of members, which are elected by the United Nations Economic, Social, and Social Council. I just want to find out or share with us this, how these members are being elected, from which structure. If you can share with us that, and then my second question in relation to the number of that we have given figures here in terms of the education sector, 2000 girls education movement. Education movement, also to come in 23. I just want to check if it will not be helpful if you can make a breakdown so that you are able to check if this 2000 covers all the provinces, how many per province and all the provinces. If you can share with us that, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I picked up in the document that two-thirds of the resources of come from the government of the government or government of the government. Okay, all right. quality of the nutritional products supplied by schools. Do you have a program running on what grade and quality of that product supplied to government, from the government to the school, and what is the outcome of that? Does that do that nutritional food supply and any influence on the quality of the other one is, goes around the death and maternal death at hospitals. Recently in the newspapers there was a document running about the situation at hospitals, specifically in the Eastern Cape. Now, what role do you have played in that situation to allow the health department to get to upgrade the situation at the hospital and what you might see other problems at the hospital? And I'm actually interested in the integrated district model of internal and mental and child health. I would just want to find out the mechanism and the monitor mechanism on the implementation of the model. Especially sometimes especially maybe in the Western paper. Can you just give me that information around that? And then there's state on the school on risk to school. State on the school. Now, the government is actually trying to address the problem. Now, can you give me some more information, especially in which problems do they usually work, most of them? Then there's the absenteeism of the teacher, but they don't present. What program and also moral on that to maybe address the young government to address that problem.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I've got also some few questions. About here, quite a mobile scene throughout the country. So I want to know what happens in the deep rural areas. If you have some people who go there down there, because there's a lot of problems in rural areas. I also lamented to Honorable Mashaimaite to say that you must also have a breakdown in the good number of teachers, 5,990. And if you can be very glad if you can also submit the list to the committee. Submit also to the committee. But I think other challenges about HIV and crime. So I don't know about the role played by UNICEF because through justice, because I heard sometimes that there are unfinished cases of children, women, abuse, whatever, in the court. And also there is also some misplacement of documents or dockets whatsoever. So what role did you play on that? Thank you.
Is there anyone? Okay.
I didn't see you, sorry.
Thank you, Chief Pastor. Firstly, let me just say thank you so much for the presentation. But I just want, maybe from the onset, just like to talk
girls in the kids movement. What actually, what was the objective for them? And maybe if you can say from UNICEF that do we, according to your assessment, are you getting what you wanted to achieve? And when you look in your record, there's a slide, there should be a reason why children having interest or maybe they don't have interest in that. What are the reasons for that? And also, as you said, under education, we've got a challenge where it's like around the issue of health is deciding. One would like to know what is the difference of the dream, because the infrastructure, currently most of our infrastructure, they don't cater for children with disabilities. What is the difference of the dream from the infrastructure?
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation of this solution, this document, 2009 annual report, to try and pick up in which provinces this organization is active. But if they can give us a printout of what they are doing in which each province, because I don't see the Northern Cape yet. That's my province. The Beers is a mining company making money in the Northern Cape for many, many, many years. And at the last page, when I look at the donors, I don't see the mining institutions. But they're making money in South Africa. In Limpopo, near Burgersfort, there's just 13 mines. But the people get the water from a river in a bucket. To give you the picture. So I'm going to give you some information about people you can go and see. To assist. Transact the mining in the Makwaland. At Barkin, on the border of Namibia, in the river of the Orange River. Barkin, Sandrift, Kubus. And down on the west coast, Honiklip Bay, between Honiklip Bay and Kwenas. That we can see if we can partner up with them. But if you can give me indication, what are you doing there? I tried to just page through the document. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone? Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. I think I will call on also my colleagues to address some of the issues under in the way skills in education, although he's on his way to the other section. So I think a lot of the issues questions related to education will be able to address that. On the election of members of UNICEF executive board, I think George, I think I understand that he recently moved from New York, so I think he has a better
thanks very much. UNICEF Executive Board falls under what we call the ECOSOC, the Economic and Social Council of the UN. The UN works through various mechanisms. The preeminent is the General Assembly, where every member state has the same vote. Below that, you have the Security Council, where only some members, very few members, have the vote. And then you have the Economic and Social Council, which deals more with development issues, development approaches. So all the new thinking about development, come from that council. There are other councils as well, like the Human Rights Council, and recently the Climate Change Environment Council, and so on. But the key ones for development are really the Economic and Social Council. UNICEF derives a lot of support from that council. And the way our board members are selected is that at the UN, there are groupings of countries. You have Europe, America, and other. They call it other, like Australia, New Zealand, coming together as a lobby group, and they elect members from that group to our board every year. You have the GULAG group, Latin America, aligning itself with some other members, also coming together to elect which countries out of their group should be on our board each year. Then you have Africa, the Africa group aligning itself with some other countries that share a common interest. Also electing who should be on the board that year. And then you have the Asian group, Middle East and Asia group, also electing members every year. So South Africa is on the board currently because the grouping said that South Africa is a leader in the issues that we represent in the current stage of work. So they should be on the board. The next time the elections take place, South Africa might still be there, or it could be another country. But Africa always has a number of spots on our board, and it is the board that approves our policies, that approves various innovative approaches globally, and that approves our funding as well. So being on the board gives us a lot of support to bring lessons from here to that level, and for us it gives us a few privileges in terms of the work that we do in South Africa. So, Honorable Member, that would be the response, a quick response. But we can share more information on it if you wish. Thank you.
I'd just like to say that actually this week, we have a new executive director who started on Monday, and just yesterday was his birthday, Mr. Anthony Lake, so our former executive director left last week, so I'm sure that he will at one place and that he visited South Africa. He was the former national security advisor under the Mr. Clinton administration. He's from the United States, and he just took over this week. So, and he knows South Africa very well. A lot of time in Canada and I've been traveling around the country. I think the other question was actually having some of the data, particularly those related to schools and the girls' education and boys' education disaggregated by province. We will be able to provide that information, I think, in our attempt to summarize probably this didn't come out clearly, but we'll be happy to forward that as you mentioned, in terms of funding, this is a bilateral and multilateral government. So when you say government, versus national committees, we call them private sector and so on, but these are again our committees around the world who mobilize funds for us. And increasingly now we are, we seem to be relying on their contribution more so than the bilateral and the multilateral organizations. On the school, I think the nutrition program, and we do not provide any direct support to the school nutrition program, but I know that what we supported was the evaluation of the school nutrition program, but Andre could say a little bit more about that.
On the evaluation, there was an evaluation done on the school nutrition program for the province. Those reports are available and it indicates, amongst others, not in depth, but also around the quality of the food being provided and the differentiation between provinces. The request was at that time that there be a national report as well as 9 provincial reports which are available, and we will happily avail that to the committee as well.
And then we had the issue of maternal death, I think, from Western Cape. What is being done? I think that was an Eastern Cape, but I think you mentioned the case of Eastern Cape. one of the things that we need to do, again here UNICEF, I go back to the my introduction. abstraction. I mean, we are not involved in service delivery. We are not involved in actually a lot of supporting program interventions so much on the ground, except for modeling and so on. Our work is because our resources are so limited, we try to be very strategic in the way we intervene. So one, we have been supporting the development of a strategic framework for the acceleration of maternal and child health, looking at actually what are some of the issues and so on. I mean, a lot of analytical work has been done in South Africa. The experts committees have submitted their recommendations, the confidential inquiry of maternal death has been, the report has been disseminated annually, and the last one, I think, makes also a series of recommendations. And some of the recommendations that are is that, one, improving the quality of antenatal care. Because more than 90% of pregnant women use more than twice, actually, the antenatal, go for antenatal care. But again, when you look at actually the quality of the care, it needs to be improved. And WHO has standards for what they call basic antenatal care. And the aim is to make sure that all health facilities adopt that approach, so that is more there and the integration of prevention of mother-to-child transmission in that package. I mean, we can provide details on this, but where it is right now and what it should be in terms of the new guidelines that countries are being urged to adopt. The other one is the emergency of digital care. The issue is mostly quality here. And here again, the confidential inquiry also has some very concrete recommendations on what needs to be done to improve the quality of care. Where at UNICEF we have been, and we believe that where we have also strong track record and so on, is the community part. Because again, here the community management of maternal, newborn, and child health, linking it to the health facility, and so on. So we work again here, we are not alone. The lead within the UN actually in terms of maternal health is the United Nations Fund for Population Activities, UNFPA, and WHO now. WHO helps to support the setting of standards and guidelines. UNFPA does help actually in addressing some of the issues of quality and so on in terms of emergency obstetric care, and promote looking at all reproductive health services. And UNICEF, we look at really the aspect of primary health care, particularly community aspects, because postnatal care is very low in terms of the coverage. Antenatal care is quite high, but once the woman has delivered, somehow that contact ceases with the health facility. So we hope that by strengthening the community aspect, quite a number of a lot of deaths can be averted. But here again, when we look at maternal deaths, the recent study showed that 43% of deaths are due to AIDS. So again, here HIV and AIDS have, by accelerating prevention and care of HIV/AIDS, we could have actually significant reduction in maternal deaths in South Africa. That and the quality of care. So it's not so much access, although access can always be increased. The other one is you talked about the model of integrated care. What we have been doing, particularly in Lembe, which is going to be actually evaluated this year, and also the Mpumalanga one that we've been supporting indirectly through the University of Pretoria, is actually strengthening the district system. So the entire, making sure that there is a micro planning at the district level, so that the district is aware in terms of catchment population, what the targets are, making sure that the community structure is part and parcel of that district system, that they are accountable to each and every health facility in their catchment population, and that those community health workers are also accountable for minimum package of intervention. These are again promoting exclusive breastfeeding, making sure that children who are not immunized are immunized, and helping organize some of outreach services, etc. So it's the full package, focusing on districts and strengthening district capacity and their accountability. So we what we have seen from some of the preliminary results is that actually it's beginning to show a significant reduction in, for instance, in the transmission of HIV, which normally for prevention of mother to child transmission, an HIV positive mother, I think, is almost about 11 to 16% transmission rate. We have seen it in Lembe as low as 3% now. So we are quite excited. I know we are going to have a joint visit with the department to see really whether the first to validate some of those reports, and if that works, then we will be able to commission an independent evaluation of some of these models, and hopefully that will be used to inform the scale up at the national and provincial level. We are also actually listing, we're using one tool called the Marginal Budgeting for Bottlenecks. This is basically a tool that was developed by UNICEF and the World Bank, but now there is also discussion to harmonize with other UN agencies. It's really meant to help countries do those systematic bottleneck analysis in terms of healthcare delivery. Where are the bottlenecks? What do you need to do to bring down the mortality rate, say, from 60 to 40%? You know, what kind of resources do you need, and so on. And that work has started in KZN and Gauteng. Some of the preliminary reports are available. We are, again, the idea is that if that works in those two provinces, probably something that could also be promoted elsewhere. But this is done with the University of Wits in those two states. And we believe that, I think, that's the kind of work that needs to be done, not just at provincial level, but district by district, sitting with the district saying that, where are the bottlenecks? How many children do you have? I mean, because we do have, I think, a lot of very good policies. I think the problem is implementation. And implementation, again, problems are here are huge. I mean, there's provinces like Gauteng and KZN, they're the same size as the country in the region. So unless we go down to the district, to the sub-district, to the communities level, we will not be able to see the kind of change that we all are hoping to see. So our hope, again, in the coming 2-3 years is to really see how can we, not so much against service delivery, how can we help identify where the bottlenecks are? How can we help map where the disparities are? Where is it that children are left behind? Focus on those children, and that also is a way to sort of make sure that the limited resources go to where there are greater needs. And I think several of you asked, where exactly are you in South Africa? Where are you intervening? But one of the reasons why it's very difficult for us to say we are in this province, in that province, is because of the nature of our support. It's been mostly upstream policy level work with operations research in a number of areas. As far as education is concerned, the Department of Health, Department of Education, I'm sorry, had selected about 5,000 schools that have not been performing well out of the 26,000. The idea is that the child-friendly school approach will actually prioritize those schools, although it will not be limited to them, but the rollout will start with those that are those schools where the level of violence is high and things and performance and so forth has been an issue. That's why we started modeling in those from those 5,000 schools. But again, we'll be very happy to share with you where exactly those 800 schools are and where the list also of the 5,000 schools as provided by the Department of Education. We have started doing a mapping exercise, and this is something that we have sequenced. We have also started to engage the Department of Social Development, and hopefully also this is something that I was hoping to discuss also with the Minister of Women and Children and persons with disability on how do we make sure that we have a system that really continuously monitors child poverty, looking at the various deprivation indexes and things. Some work is being done there, but I think we need to look at it and make sure that decision makers like yourself have very clear picture of you know, indicator by indicator, where are the problems. And sometimes when you sort of overlay those maps, you come up with the same area. So recently I saw some of the preliminary results from the work being done by the Department of Social Development at Oxford University, and it appears that, again, they're going back to those same areas. So, but this is some work that needs to be done properly this year, because it will help us also be clear about where we will focus in the coming 2-3 years in our country program cycle. I think again that it's great to be everywhere, but we do not have the resources and so on. So we will be also as an organization guided by human rights. I think our priority also is to make sure that those who are underprivileged, those who are actually deprived, are the ones that are going to be our priority in terms of UNICEF support. I think in terms of Kurdish provinces, I think I did say, I think you raised the issue that even as I was coming, I was just thinking about, again, because of the mapping and so on, and I think about what I've been discussing with my colleagues here. But one of the things, I think the issues of farms is something that somehow falls through the cracks. We should be looking at rural areas in particular, and not so much farm, but even urban. I wouldn't even say that we have looked at this closely. This is something that we plan to do, because even in urban areas, particularly in formal settlements, understanding really the plight of children in urban settlements. But farms, definitely, I think what we have seen in a number, even during Child Health Week, I think the situation of children, I think, needs definitely a lot more attention there. Child labor is an issue that we have seen, and for example, the recent high profile cases that we do have issues with child labor. And we intend to work with the International Labor Organization or with our sister agency to see how we can actually address, give more visibility to the issue of child labor in South Africa, particularly in farms and so on. So definitely spot on. It is some of those issues that we will discuss also with the department, the Department of Women and Children, but also the Department of Social Development and also the Children's Institute here in Cape Town. We've been doing some work with them. But these are some of the things that we have on the table. Understanding better the situation of children and women in this setting. The list of teachers, HIV and crime and justice. I think, you know, again, that's also, I believe that's an area that really needs strengthening in terms of the working with justice. We've been working a lot with the National Prosecuting Authority in scaling up this to the La Care model. Because it has proven to increase the conviction rate. So that, you know what, when it comes to sexual offences, it's always been very difficult to get all the evidence and really convict and make sure that there's a convict. So the Tutu Bella model is supposed to be by making sure that they have a multi-sectoral approach, by involving the Department of Health and DNA testing and so on, the police and everything working together, they try to increase the conviction rate, but also make sure that there is no secondary victimization, again, by asking the person to go to several places. So it's a one-stop shop where the person can get all these services. But having said that, we realize also that, you know, that we've been working on looking at the child-friendly court. In South Africa is the model in Africa. I know that in my previous post I was in Malawi, and we used to send a lot of our counterparts to come and see the model that South Africa has of child-friendly courts. However, we realized that it is not, you know, in terms of coverage and things adequate. So I think it's something that we plan to beef up as we develop our new program with the Justice Department. But we have started working on new cases with the Justice Department on the implementation of the Justice for Children Act, now which has commenced in April. What are some of the things that actually need to happen back to well, the northern Cape, I think we are again here. We are not in every province, but northern Cape. I know that we have been in discussion with the Rio on how we can actually partner and in what area and so on. So there are some ideas that we can on the table, but that's something that we would like to pursue. Until now, we've been collaborating with IDF and others, but it's been kind of small scale. But we want to find also more strategic way of working with corporate partners so that we, if we can get some of the partners to drive the program and making sure they all come together around the common plan, which is education, and maybe more than people where they are. Of course, the priority should be also in the communities where they are operating. So there's some discussions, but we will be very happy also for some concrete ideas that you have, because we have initiated some dialogue with my company.
Just regarding the GEM clubs, the girls' education movement actually started to ensure that children are, or girl children in particular, retained in school, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. But I think in South Africa we have the unique situation that our dropout rate is higher for boys than for girls, especially in transition to the FET band after basic education is completed. And that is also why there is now a mix between girls' education and boys' education movement. But the primary aim of that is also to look at this point in time, to the quality of the education, particularly for girls, their access to maths and science kind of subjects. Because still, and I think that is where the issue around gender comes in our school system, that though we have a high number of the girls in the FET band is much higher than the boys, still the boys are much higher in terms of the hardcore subjects, as they call it, in the education department in terms of maths and science. So and spin-off of the GEM program is what we call at this point the Technogirls program, which is particularly looking at girls in the school system and placing them with companies to expose them to the world of mathematics and science and technology so that they can make also informed choices and influence their peers around that in specific. In terms of the 2000 clubs, that is what is on paper that is there. That we have done during a snap order with the National Department of Basic Education. Those who are active are a little bit less. That they are active, but this information is important to also see how the girls' education movement program has grown since it was instituted in 2002 and 2003 in the country. So part of the plans will be to do an evaluation specifically on that. The other information I think has already been covered, and on the absenteeism of teachers in school, I think the study is actually assisting the Department of Education to do the monitoring of the absenteeism. That is our further strengthened with our support to their monitoring or the expansion of their monitoring evaluation system. I just wanted to say on the question on the Northern Cape and the rural areas, currently we have a team visiting the Northern Cape with the Child Friendly School program there, and they are in Claymus and Carcamas and that area. And are implementing a very successful program actually in the province. They're there as well. The visit is just there today. Actually, they are attending to 131 schools throughout the Northern Cape province, which is dealing with the enormous challenge of distances and travelling time and all of that. But there is active involvement.
Thank you. I think we have been exhausted. Our question, I don't see any. Is there any follow-up? Want to comment? Okay. Okay.
The question?
Oh, okay. Just because now, want to look at the time also? Yes. Wendy, you want to say something?
Yeah.
25%. But you know what? I'm not like the issue of the child with disability. I feel that maybe that's an oversight. But I also wanted to comment one would be much interesting around the issue of, like you were saying, that there's a study that has been conducted around the issue of the quality of that the kids are getting. And I think maybe from the education side, one would be happy if maybe the recommendations after that report that we have to standardize, you know, food, because when you go to the school, the food that children are getting, really, it's not assisting. Most especially that we are looking at the issue of HIV and AIDS, really, somehow we are also contributing to the negative health of our own children because of the food that we are getting them daily.
Another
thank you. Thank you very much, Mugote. I'm very interested, especially in children before the foundation, like the ECD. Now, government is now actually implementing the grade R classes in the normal education sector. Now, but the ECD sector is mostly handled by the social development and the health. Now, what is the viewpoint of UNICEF actually to ask government to maybe to have a study how they can implement education from that sector, not only from Greta? We understand that it's a subsidy from government the sector, but I actually believe that we will have a better outcome in education if we start from the year 3 up and not only from 5. And the other one I'm actually worried about the mobile classes and the children at school. Now, that is very good to supply and make use of the classes and mobile classes for the university. But what about an educator? What quality of that education? There on that border to give the necessary support for those children so that they can have a better outcome of education. Maybe you can supply me for a couple of questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I will start with the last one. The mobile classes that have been installed in Messina were installed in one in a primary school or four in a primary school and four in a secondary school. So they are part of the schooling system. We wanted to avoid to have a separate school for the children that come across the border. So those children, the Zimbabwean children, assimilated in a normal school setup. The problem was those two schools did not have enough space to accommodate additional children due to the influx. So that is where we support them. The educators are educators provided by the Limpopo Department of Education and are part of the education system. And Limpopo has quite a number of access educators that they could mobilize for that. And they are paid for by the Limpopo Department of Education. So it's not a separate school that was set up. It's part of the South African schooling system, and the children are following the South African curriculum. And also the issues on language barriers have been addressed. It's not a major problem in Messina because there's already quite a lot of children of migrants there, so it is not a big challenge. Around children with disabilities, sorry, I forgot to respond to that question, is what we have done is, though we don't have a direct specific program on that, we try to make sure that it's included in all the support that we provided. And one example, or I can give two examples. The one example is the child-friendly school framework that we have developed with the Department of Education. Accessibility and the right to education for all children are in those guidelines. It's also very much part of the training that are provided to SGBs and school leaders on that. And one of the areas that we focus on is the issue around equality, not only right to access but also equality and treating people with different abilities and having respect for diversity. is part of that. Also, when we developed the National Early Learning and Development Standards for children in birth to four, the issue of disability was very prominent in that those discussions. And if you have access to that, and we can gladly send you copies of that, we decided actually with the Department of Education to make sure that we do how the standards are divided, are graded, that children can do certain things at certain ages, but also to allow flexibility to accommodate children that might have physical or mental delays, but also to use that as a benchmark for early identification of disability, either as a mental disability or physical disability. So I take the one on ECD as well. actually, my previous life in UNICEF was pretty much focused on early childhood development. I want to start off to say, I think what has happened in terms of early childhood development programs that are supported by the Department of Social Development and health has evolved over the past 7 years significantly. It has moved from a primary care kind of custodian paradigm to more early learning and development approach. And for that is also where the early learning and development standards are important, because that will also set the benchmark of what are the outcomes for children. Yes, and we have actively, actually, as UNICEF, supported all three departments that are the primary responsible for early childhood development in looking at improving the quality of the training of the ECD practitioners, and also to develop alternative models for early learning and development, and also monitoring systems that they can use to look at this quality. But I think the absolute correct assumption there is that investment in those years do have a return, not only in the school system, but also further in life. And I think it is quoted also in our annual report. So still, we don't think there's sufficient resources invested there, but it has increased rapidly. And there needs to be more investment, because then one will have better outcomes for children and society as a whole.
You have then? Yeah, come on, of course. Yes, okay. Thank you, Honorable members. I think all the questions are covered, and we have to set our questions. So now I think this is the end of our program. I think I will ask Honorable Master Maite to thank the delegation from UNICEF.
Thanks to Honorable Chairperson for the opportunity. On behalf of the committee, we would like to take the opportunity to thank the UNICEF for giving us a briefing. And then we are looking forward to work with you. Some of us who are new in this committee, we need more information on UNICEF, the activities and all the support. And thank you very much. Go ahead, go share.
Thank you so much. So we really would like to thank you on behalf of UNICEF for inviting us and giving us also the opportunity to share with you, you know, what we do. But also, I believe that this is the beginning of partnership. And as I said, I'm here to introduce you also with the team, but they will be coming back again to discuss with you on some concrete ways which we can collaborate. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Point.